political question, not a biblical question.
Well, right? It is a biblical question, but it has political overtones. I think the term and the place, the geographical location of Gaza is included in the Promised Land.
Well, but wouldn't Syria also be included? And Jordan, certainly. I mean, there were many tribes that were east of the Jordan River. The initial description of Palestine in 1917 included all of Jordan, too.
Exactly. I believe, and we do believe, that at some point it is deeded, but it will be actually occupied. It will be a part of the land of Israel.
You think that the modern state of Israel will at some point take over lands that are currently in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon?
I don't know about the modern state of Israel. I don't know about... I just don't have a view for that. All I know is what the Scripture says. I don't have a timetable for when that's going to take place.
Let me ask you something else. You said biblical issues, and we talked about territory. Are there other biblical issues other than territory that you concentrate on at Kufi?
At this point, it's primarily that. We have Dr. Hagee's made statements about Iran and the necessity of not taking the military option off the table for Iran, but that's not directly related to a biblical issue, I don't think, at this point. I think it's realistic to expect that Iran is going to do what they say they're going to do if they're allowed to do it.
Okay, so that's more of a geopolitical issue. That's more of you fear that Iran is a threat to Israel, and therefore... Now, let me ask you, when you say that Jews going back to Israel, you said it's part of the ultimate fulfillment, but not the complete ultimate fulfillment. What did you mean by that?
Well, Ezekiel says, for example, in Ezekiel chapter 36, he talks about the scattering, the dispersion of the Jewish people, and why he does that. Or why he did it, actually. But then he says that I will bring them back. And we're experiencing. As a matter of fact, the language that is used there is very vivid. He speaks of, Ezekiel 36, therefore say to the house of Israel, this is what the sovereign Lord says. It is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I'm going to do these things, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you've gone. He said, I'm going to bring you back. I will take you, verse 24, I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land. Says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you'll be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I'll give you a new heart, put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I'll put my spirit in you, move you to follow my decrees, and be careful to keep my laws. You'll live in the land, and I gave your forefathers. You'll be my people, and I'll be your God. Now, that's not happened yet.
It's happened, I mean, arguably twice. I mean, once after the Babylonian exile when they rebuilt the Second Temple, and then the other time would be the modern state of Israel.
Well, the return has taken place, but that's why we say it's a partial fulfillment, because he says there's going to be a spiritual renewal that the people experience. That's not happened. I mean, Israel is a secular state. It's run by seculars.
So you think Israel should be a theocratic state?
I think.
I mean, right now under Israeli law, there are certainly all religions are free to practice. Orthodox Jews, as well as certainly Christians and Muslims and so forth. Yes, maybe 75% of the people don't practice. They're Jews, but they don't practice their religion very much. But certainly, people are practicing religion in the state of Israel.
Well, he's not talking about just practicing religion. He says, I'll cleanse you from your impurities and your idols. I will give you a new heart. I'll put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. That's not happened. Didn't happen from the Babylonian captivity, nor has it happened since Israel's become a state. There is a great spiritual renewal that will take place in Israel. Now, scriptures indicate that comes at a great price, because there is a... It's going to get worse before it gets better, as I...
Well, let's talk about that. Your view, that's based primarily on the book of Revelations, right?
No. It's not based on the book of Revelations. That gives some details on it. But Zechariah, the prophet Zechariah, is very clear as to what's going to happen. I mean, and of course all the prophets spoke of a remnant. But for example, he says in Zechariah chapter 8, or chapter 13, in the whole land, declares the Lord, two-thirds will be struck down and perish, and yet one-third will be left in it. And this third I will bring into the fire. I will refine them like silver and test them like gold. And they will call on my name, and I will answer them, and I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is our God.
Okay. You know, of course, that's happened several times in Jewish history, from the destruction of the Romans to arguably the Holocaust. There have been massive amounts of Jews that have been slaughtered, but a remnant has remained. So that has happened several times in Jewish history.
It has happened several times. But when you read Zechariah chapter 12 through 14, you have a reference time and time again. I think I counted, 17 times where it refers to in that day. And it speaks of a time when all the nations, matter of fact, Zechariah says this. He says in chapter 12, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup that sends all the surrounding peoples reeling. Judah will be besieged as well as Jerusalem on that day when all the nations of the earth are gathered against her. I will make Jerusalem an immovable rock, for all the nations who try to move it will be injured. On that day, I will make the leaders of Judah like a firepot and a woodpile, like a flaming torch among sheaves. They will consume right and left all the surrounding peoples, but Jerusalem will remain intact in her place. Now, that's never happened before. All the nations...
There's all kinds of prophecies. There's certainly many Jewish prophecies that foretell the coming of the Messiah. There are many Christian prophecies that talk about the second coming of Jesus.
Yeah.
What, in your view, is the connection between Christian support for Israel and the second coming of Jesus?
Well, I know there's been a lot said about that, but the support for Israel is not based upon the second coming of Jesus.
It's not.
No, absolutely not. It is based. Where do we get this idea of the support for Israel? We get it from the Hebrew Scriptures. Where do we get the idea that things are going to get worse before they get better? We get it from the Hebrew Scriptures. We get it from...
This isn't from Revelations. This isn't from the New Testament in your
book. Well, the Revelation confirms it and gives some additional details. But the heart of this is from the prophet, the Hebrew prophets.
Does your group, and I don't know whether... Are you a Southern Baptist? Is that your denomination?
No,
or I don't know.
I'm a Presbyterian.
You're Presbyterian, okay. And so you have many denominations in your group, Christian
Chinese. We do, and I think that's strongly in favor of the group. There are no doctrinal requirements to be a member of KUFI.
Okay.
I think that's important to note. There are no doctrinal. So everybody's not in agreement doctrinally on all these things. But we're agreement on the mission, and the mission is to support Israel in matters related to biblical issues.
What I'm trying to figure out is there are evangelical groups, some of whom have been connected with I don't want to say Pastor Haig, I mean possibly with him, but certainly there are groups that support Israel, that believe that Jews all over the world really need to go to Israel, including American Jews, including Jews elsewhere, and that when all the Jews come back to Israel, then Jesus will have a second coming. Did I get that right, or do you think that
no, I hear that from Jews very frequently, but
that's not your understanding.
No,
of
that's not my
Christian
understanding
doctrine.
Of what the Scripture said. We support Israel not on the basis of the second coming of Jesus, but we support Israel on the basis of the covenants that God has made with Israel and the Jewish people. These are inviolable covenants. They are valid today.
I'd be curious to know whether you support the Jewish people apart from Israel. For example, do you consider there is a Christian obligation, it didn't happen, but do you consider there'd be a Christian obligation to help Jews during a Holocaust period outside of the land of Israel? Or is this
absolutely.
A specific... There is. Okay. It's not.
Absolutely.
So you believe in the existence of the
fact,
Jewish people, not just the state of Israel.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I consider us in the lineage of Ruth, who said, who was a non-Jew, who said, your people will be my people, your God will be my God, where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. I think we are in that lineage, and I think You'll find that some of the Christian Zionists were the ones who stepped up during the Second World War, and were the ones who
There were a few, definitely.
I'm sorry.
There were some. There were definitely some righteous Gentiles. They're honored in Israel today. They were the minority, but there were definitely some, and those were incredibly honorable, courageous people. My concern is when I hear someone, and I admit that, you know, I have little respect for her. I don't know whether you do or not. But when I hear someone like Ann Coulter talk about perfected Jews, that's something that scares the Jewish community. Let's face it.
Well, yeah, she's you have to realize that's the way that woman makes a living. I mean,
well, I understand that, and it's not about her. I have no respect for her. But in general, to what extent is Christian support for Israel, and this is a concern among Jews and among secular Americans and so forth, that it's really all about trying to convert the Jews to Christianity, that it's all about perfecting Jews, Mark, in that way.
Let me be very candid with you. I'm a Christian. I'm a satisfied Christian. I'm a strong believer. I wish that everybody were Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists. I wish everybody was a Christian, but that's not my goal. That's not my calling. And I believe that what I'm supposed to do within the confines of Christians United for Israel and our own organization, the Jerusalem Connection, is to, and I would tell you the mission statement for our organization, the Jerusalem Connection, is to inform, to educate, and to activate support for Israel and the Jewish people. That's my DNA.
But, I guess my question is, in your DNA, and I know that Pastor Hagee has written a lot about the end of times and, you know, the apocalypse and revelations. And my understanding is, and again, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is the idea is that when all the Jews go back to Israel, there'll be a great war. And then Jesus will return. And at that point, all the unsaved Jews go to hell or get slaughtered. Is that not part of dominionist theology, part of the theology of many of your supporters?
I can't speak for all the supporters, but I can say that we believe that Jesus is the Messiah. He's the Jewish Messiah. We believe that he's the promised Messiah of whom Moses and the prophets spoke. And we believe that there is a day coming when Jews and the world will recognize that he is indeed the Messiah.
And look, you know, if Jesus comes and all the people recognize him, that's fine. But my question is the passages that talk about those that don't accept Jesus and the idea that unsaved, and not just Jews, but anyone of any religion that doesn't accept Jesus will be slaughtered. Now, you know, if it's God's angel doing it, that, you know... No, but my concern is that human beings are going to see those kinds of passages and act upon them. I'll just be very frank with you.
Act in what way? What do you mean?
Well, my concern is if those passages are indeed what you or at least what a number of members of your organization believe in, my concern is that an unstable person might see Jesus return in some fashion that's maybe clear to that person but not clear to all of humanity and start taking action to slaughter the unsaved.
Yeah. Well, that could very well happen, but that's not part of the biblical plan. Now, there is, I should tell you, I mean, and the prophets speak of this, that there will only be a remnant. And you know this as well. All of them speak of this. There's a remnant that will be saved. There's only a remnant of the Gentiles will be saved.
What happens to the others?
Well, evidently, when the Messiah comes, there is much of the world that at that point, at that very point in time, every eye sees him, and he becomes, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But at that point, everybody doesn't believe in him as we believe in him,
and then what happens?
The world is populated after he comes. There's been a massive destruction. Now, I think there's some details that the Book of Revelation gives. At that point, it says an army coming from the Euphrates will destroy a third of mankind.
Now, an army coming from the Euphrates.
Euphrates, yeah.
So who do you think is that army? What are we talking about here?
I don't know who that would be. I think the one that has probably the most potential for that at this point would be a coalition of forces behind Iran. And I think, you know, the president said just yesterday, you know, if you want to avoid World War III, then be sure that Iran does not have nuclear capability.
I guess here's my basic question that I just want to get a real clear statement from you, and then I'm going to take a break and open up the phones because I know my listeners want to ask you some questions as well.
Sure.
But the fear is that because of this end-of-days theology, okay, because of this eschatology is the official word. I know you know what that means. My listeners may not. Eschatology is the study of the end of days and religious beliefs as to what will happen. It would include the apocalypse and revelations and really any other religion's belief in the end of days. The concern is that if it's taught at the end of days that those that do not accept Jesus will be slaughtered, the fear is that some may take that slaughter in their own hands. And I'd really like to hear a very strong statement from you, if you can give me one, saying that you and your supporters are very clear that's not an action that any of them should take.
That's not what?
That's not anything that they should do. They shouldn't be part of the army of the Euphrates.
Absolutely not. I mean that army is opposed to the Messiah. That army is opposed to God's people. That army that's released there, it's spoken of in Revelation chapter 9, and it says, where God says, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates, four angels who had been kept for this day, this hour, this month, to kill a third of mankind. The number of the mounted troops was 200 million. I heard their number. Now, that's some specifics that the book of Revelation gives, but the general outline of that is given to us in the prophets, in the Hebrew scriptures. And the sages have spoken of this, that there would be this great calamity, this great catastrophe that the world is heading for. And what we're
But you reject the idea that anyone should take the law into their own hands and punish people who are not saved.
Absolutely.
In any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
All right. So
But again, I want to make it clear that Cufi and Christian Zionists as a whole do not base their support on Israel on an end-time scenario that we don't know fully what's going to take place. We don't base it on the future. We base it on the past, upon what God has said as far as the covenants are concerned.
So let me be clear. Is supporting Israel an end of itself, or is it a means to an end?
It's
an end of itself. It's a good thing whether or not it causes an ingathering of the exiles or the second coming or the apocalypse or revelation or end of days. That's not the basis for your support.
It's support of Israel because God support for them recognizing that what Israel represents today is a partial fulfillment of God's covenant promise.
So I have to ask you, why does your leader, Pastor Hagee, concentrate so often on end-of-days eschatology? Are you saying that his support of Israel is totally separate from that discussion?
If you would ask him, he would tell you that the primary reason that he supports Israel is just the reasons that I've given you. We've talked about this, and I am in total agreement with this. Some of the nuances of eschatology we may not be as clear on, or maybe not be in agreement on, but we are totally in agreement on the fact that God has made a covenant, an inviolable covenant, a bond in blood, and that covenant will not be disputed, it will not be violated, it will be carried out, and it includes land promises. And so that's why we get very much involved with do not give up more land.
Where this can lead. I mean, if you go by Abraham's promise, you're talking about a wide swath of territory that even Israel doesn't claim to want. extremely few people in Israel would argue that they need to start conquering Jordan and Syria and Lebanon. I doubt 1% would argue that.
No, that's for Israel to determine, and that's beyond our scope at this point. But it is within our realm of recognition that the geography that they're talking about today should remain in Israel's control. I think one of the, just as an aside to this, I think one of the most encouraging things that I've heard that have come out of this whole discussion is the possibility of reconsidering, it's been considered before, reconsidering Jordan as the Palestinian state. Yasser Arafat said it was. Prime Minister Sharon said that Jordan was the Palestine.
But what do you do with the Arabs that are living there?
Living where?
In Jordan. In the West Bank and in Gaza.
70% of those are Palestinians.
Right. True. But if you're, I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you saying Israel should extend its borders there?
I think that's a much more realistic and comprehensive understanding. I tell you, the one who's done the hard due diligence on this, and that's Rabbi Benny Elon, who's a member of the Israeli Knesset, and he has had this since for the last 3 or 4 years, what he's called the right road to peace. Matter of fact, Senator Sam Brownback endorsed it. I just heard on your news there just before we came on.
Yeah, he's getting out of the presidential race.
Yeah, he's going to step out, but he endorsed Benny Elon's roadmap to peace, the right initiative.
Dr. Hudgens, I want to take a quick break because I know that a lot of listeners are going to want to ask you a lot of questions. I want to give them the chance to do that. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366, or call 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
from Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Dr. Jim Hutchins. He's the Regional Director of Christians United for Israel here in Washington, D.C., a group whose founder and national chairman is the pastor John Hagee. Dr. Hutchins, I'm reading the Wikipedia, and of course I realize that that can be wrong, which is why I'm asking the questions. But it says that John Hagee has denounced replacement theology or supersessionism, as you know, is the idea that basically God's relationship with the Jews ended when Jesus came, and you know Christians are the new Israel, and the old Israel has sort of lost its luster. Do you agree with the rejection of replacement theology?
Absolutely, absolutely. Christian Zionists are by definition non-supersessionists.
That's interesting. So there are none in your group that are supersessionists?
No.
Interesting.
Well, because a supersessionist believes that the covenants have been fulfilled in the church. The covenants with regard to Israel are now fulfilled in the church. As you said, the church is the new Israel. So by definition, a Christian Zionist who believes that the modern state of Israel is a partial fulfillment of God's covenant is not a supersessionist.
Is there a lot of disagreement, then, among evangelical Christians on this issue?
Yeah, there is disagreement. And I should say that recently, I think in July, there were some 30 evangelical leaders that wrote a letter to President Bush advocating support for the two-state solution, saying that we have to deal justly with the Palestinians and that they have as much right there as the Jews do. Basically, that's from a supersessionist position. A Christian Zionist could not write a letter like that.
Why not? I mean, it seems to me that those are two separate issues. One way you think that the Palestinian Arabs deserve rights is something that you can believe as a human being recognizes that people should have rights, totally apart from religion's sake.
Yeah, but the way that was couched in that letter to the president was that it drew a moral equivalence to the stand for land and the terrorism of Palestinian jihadists and what Israel has done to retaliate to protect its own citizens. There's just no moral equivalence there. My response to that is that is a very selective justice. That is not even-handed justice to draw.
But what does that have to do with supersessionism? I mean, supersessionism is a religious principle. Go ahead.
That's an outgrowth of a supersessionist mentality, that the Palestinians have as much right to that land as the Jews do. They don't.
What would you say is? And again, I don't know if there are any polls taken. Maybe there are polls taken, but among Christians, and we can talk about evangelical Christians or the larger Christian community, Catholics, Protestants, those that believe in this supersessionist theology and those that believe that there's still an authentic relationship between God and the Jewish people.
And your question is?
Are there numbers on that? I mean, is it half and half?
Well,
do most?
Historically, the Catholic Church has been supersessionist, and the mainline Protestant denominations are supersessionist. What you see in the Christian Zionist is a grassroots level, groundswell of people who have gone to the Bible without any without a theological system imposed upon it, and they've taken the scriptures at face value, and they come out with this conclusion. They come out with the same conclusion that the Orthodox Jew does when he reads the Torah, and that's why we have common ground with so many of the Orthodox Jews. We read the same scriptures and we come out with the same conclusion.
I know, for example, Senator Lieberman has spoken at, I believe, at Kufi.
He has, yes.
But generally, you're more connected with the Republican Party. I mean, it seems to me that.
Thank you. Thank you. This is the Quality News Network. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto returned back to her country today after 8 years in exile. Two explosions occurred near the truck that was carrying her through a procession. She was unhurt. However, at least 51 people were killed and more than 150 were wounded. Earlier when she arrived, she was greeted by a crowd of thousands of supporters. She said, quote, "If we want to save Pakistan, we have to have democracy," end quote. President Bush's nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey continued his testimony at the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings today. There were some heated exchanges between the nominee and some Democratic senators over the controversial terror interrogation technique known as waterboarding. The House of Representatives was unable to override President Bush's veto of the bill that would have expanded the child health insurance program. The vote was 273 to 156, which was 13 votes shy of the two-thirds necessary to override the veto. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert met with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Good afternoon and welcome to America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton. Today is Thursday, October 18th. If you haven't heard by now, the House failed to override the Bush veto on the S-chips. May they all rot in their own waste. What a shame. Scandalous. We're going to talk about that in Seaton Notes down the road. It's calling it Alice Falls Down the Beltway. In our first half hour, coming up in just about 8 minutes, Philip Trumpeter is going to be with us. He's a psychologist with the Modesto Police Department. We're going to be talking about the psychology of cops. And in our second half hour, Jane Hersey is going to be with us. She's going to be talking about ADHD and the Feingold diet and how fewer children will have, deficit disorders if they improve their diet. Our quote of the day is from Winnie, Sir Winston Churchill, who said, "A fanatic is one who can't change his mind and won't change the subject." We've seen some of those around. Some observations on the news, speaking of them. With President Bush warning of World War III with Iran, I don't think he gets the concept of world, but he's scary enough. The Iraqi electricity minister has awarded power contracts worth over $1 billion to Iranian and Chinese companies. Kind of takes your breath away, doesn't it? We're ready to attack Iran for aiding insurgents in Iraq while Iraq is paying them to build a power plant and supply electricity from their own grid to southern Iraq. One wonders how many American tax dollars that are pouring into Iraq's government are now going to go to China and Iran. One doesn't want to wonder about that too much. It's too depressing. A news article reports that insurance companies are canceling homeowners' policies in the East because of concerns the companies have of suffering huge financial losses as they took from Katrina when the hurricane hit the Gulf Coast 2 years ago. The tab for that was about $40 billion. But when, as the story says, a couple in Garden City, Long Island, had their insurance canceled, something was clearly out of whack. These people live 12 miles from the Atlantic Ocean in an area not prone to hurricanes. I mean, of course, insurance companies are not interested in taking risks, just cashing premium checks, but they're going to be in trouble if they stop writing policies altogether, especially on the basis of warnings that the next 20 years are going to see more hurricanes than usual or ever before. Consider that forecasters have predicted for the past two seasons that we would see many and far more damaging storms than usual, and we haven't, by any means. In Portland, Maine, after at least 17 pregnancies in three middle schools where children are aged from about 11 to 13, the school board of one of them voted to allow students to receive information about birth control without their parents being notified. The medical director of school-based health centers that will provide the information declared that, quote, it has been shown over and over again that this does not increase sexual activity. Commented a parent of a child at the school, not every child is getting guidance needed to keep them safe. That's clear, isn't it? This is about giving kids who are sexually active the tools that they need. Better than them getting pregnant. Yet another of those duh studies, the kind where the conclusion is obvious and people are paid to find it. This one in Britain determined that a lousy marriage can make you literally sick. No, really? What a flippin' surprise. You mean anxiety and torment and misery and sadness can, hurt your body? Yup. Let's see if there is something we can get worked up about that is as meaningless as possible. How about an email from a Democratic congressional staffer that suggested people going into NASCAR land in Alabama and North Carolina should make sure they have their shots? We all presume that it was a joke about how primitive are the people who find car racing fascinating, the same people who tend to have Playboy magazine on their coffee table, use the N-word, and vote Republican. What's the big deal? Of course you need your shots. Well, some people took offense, including the head of a racetrack whose name, yes, I'm not kidding, his name is Humpy Wheeler. Humpy Wheeler said, quote, the very idea of immunization is laughable. It's like taping your ankles to go to the mailbox. I would let you sit with that for a moment, but I don't think it would help. Sometimes a jury system seems like a not-so-good idea, like the panel that awarded $85,000 to a Nashville mother whose two daughters accidentally saw a few minutes of a porn movie at a motel where the three were staying. The girls, 8 and 9, were watching The Idiot Box. When Mom went to take a shower, they changed the channel. Apparently, there wasn't an adult lock on the television, so they saw a couple of minutes of an adult film. The woman sued the motel. The motel owner offered to settle with the woman, but she turned down $50,000. The jury somehow managed to award the woman $65,000 for legal and medical bills. What medical bills? And $20,000 for emotional distress. Please! Shame on her and the jury. I am so upset. Can someone find me an attorney? Too many rats in a box, too many idiots among them. A Scranton, Pennsylvania woman got upset when her toilet overflowed, don't we all? She cussed out the offending porcelain throne, and her neighbor across the way heard her and asked her to quiet down. Well, the victim of the overflowing toilet hadn't quite finished her tirade, so the neighbor, an off-duty police officer, called headquarters, and the woman was charged with disorderly conduct. Someone at the Pennsylvania ACLU objected to the citation, declaring, you can't prosecute somebody for swearing at a cop or a toilet. Hey, I don't make these quotes up. I just put them in there because I'm protecting you. I'm reading them first. Oh, and this just in to my email box. The Supreme Court has given Al Gore's Nobel Peace Prize to George Bush, apparently because they judged that the president deserved it more. Writing for the majority, according to this email, Antonin Scalia said, quote, it is true that Al Gore has done a lot of talking about global warming, but President Bush has actually helped create global warming. Well, you know, I mean, you know. He has. That said, we're going to go to a commercial break, and we will be back in 2 minutes with more of America Back on Track.
Hueyelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like a grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys coming in and out of here, too.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40, because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
We're back. America Back on Track. And joining us now by telephone is Philip Trumpeter. He's with the Modesto Police Department. He's a psychologist. Phil, welcome to America Back on Track. Hello, Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tony.
There we go. You know, it's amazing. I push these buttons every day, and sometimes I just don't get them in the right order. Well, I'll start over. Welcome to America Back on Track. Thank you for joining us. Phil Trumpeter with the Modesto Police Department. A psychologist, yes?
That's right.
You were quoted in an article about what happened in Wisconsin with the young man who went amok, and you noted that Wisconsin, or at least this department, didn't have standard psychological tests. That is correct?
That's correct, Tony. My understanding of the state of Wisconsin is that they do not require a pre-employment psychological screening for an applicant to become a peace officer.
That seems sort of startling, considering the authority that they have and that they're carrying guns that they're allowed to use.
Well, you know, the question came up when I was first contacted after that tragedy about how many states actually do require a pre-employment psychological screening, and up until the last week or so, no one had any information as to how many states in the United States actually required it. I estimated 80%, and I really have come to find out an even more alarming figure, which is that actually only 14 states require a pre-employment psychological screening that involves an evaluation by a licensed psychologist or a psychiatrist. There's probably 40 states that have some language that they want to hire people who are emotionally stable to carry out peace officer responsibilities, but they don't really have a mandatory process to be able to actually measure that.
That doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense, particularly considering how young some of these men are, particularly the young men, I would think, as opposed to young women, but the age should make a significant difference. This fellow in Wisconsin who shot 7 people and then himself was, I think, 20 years old.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tony, I had a little trouble hearing you.
I say that this fellow in Wisconsin was 20 years old, and that young men in particular who are going to be given uniforms, authority, and guns need to be checked out. I mean, it would seem to me that that's a particular demographic, young men who need to be examined and screened to some degree because of the typically the pressures on the job, let alone what might be troubling them off the job.
Well, I would certainly agree with your position. I think that there are others that are saying, you know, we're sending 17, 18, 19-year-old men and women to fight our wars for us. So in some ways, they're perfectly capable in that setting to carry out the mission of our country. But I would agree with you. The demands of being a peace officer are so great that I have some question about whether it makes any sense to have 18-year-olds serving as peace officers. In California, the minimum age is 21.
Well, and that would seem to make more sense. Do you have a process at the Modesto Police Department of screening applicants?
Yes. Well, in California, there's been a law since 1985 that requires all agencies that employ peace officers to do a pre-employment psychological screening, and it spells out that there has to be psychological testing. It spells out a standard that must be met, and it spells out that it must be done by a licensed psychologist or a psychiatrist, but not just any psychologist or psychiatrist. It has to be a psychologist or psychiatrist who's familiar with the job demands of a peace officer, with employment law, and generally the culture of law enforcement. So the state of California, I think, has some pretty rigorous requirements for the psychological screening process.
As well it should. I've known plenty of peace officers at various levels of various departments, state and federal and local, and those who are more senior look upon those who are coming in with some concern often because a lot of the departments, the people who come in are cliquish, they're more physical, they're not so nuanced. There can be issues that come up in those cases.
Sure. You know, in California, you know, we're a leader in so many different areas, and we're a leader when it comes to the psychological screening of what it takes to be a peace officer. And there's an organization called the California Commission on POST, or POST for short, that develops selection and training standards for our state's peace officers. And over the past 4 years, led by a very competent industrial organizational psychologist by the name of Shelley Spielberg, who works for POST, she's gathered about a dozen subject matter experts in California, and we've developed 10 psychological domains that we measure when we are screening peace officers. And not only are they clearly related to peace officer functioning, they just appeal to common sense, too. I think the public would say, well of course. Of course our cops ought to be flexible and adaptable, and of course our cops ought to have integrity, and of course our cops ought to show emotional regulation so that they maintain their composure under stress or in dealing with difficult situations. So those are like three of the domains of the 10 that we actually look at every time we screen a peace officer applicant.
We're talking with Phil Trumpeter of the Modesto Police Department about the psychology of cops. We will be back with more right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
We're back. America back on track. We're talking with Phil Trumpeter of the Modesto Police Department. Phil, what are the qualities that make a good cop, good psychological qualities? You talked about integrity and patience. How do those square with the image that I think we have about police in this country?
Well, again, I think the domains that we've identified really capture it. So we want somebody who is a team player. Even though you have to operate independently in many situations, law enforcement is pretty much of a team effort, so you don't want the hot dogs. You want people who are conscientious and dependable because they need to self-initiate a lot of activity. They need to be people that you can count on to do what's required of them, because we delegate a lot of responsibility to cops, and they're pretty much out in the field operating independently from a lot of close supervision. Integrity. I mean, that just goes without saying. If they're taking a cold burglary report at a Hershey plant in Oakdale, California, in the middle of the night, and they got Hershey bars all over the place, and nobody's around and wouldn't miss a box or two of Hershey bars being taken, how tempting that would be. Well, you got to have somebody who has the internal controls that they're not going to heist a couple of boxes of Hershey bars. And another very important issue, and maybe speaks to what may have happened up in Wisconsin, although I don't know the details up there, is that a lot of cops might do fine while they're in uniform and on duty, but have a lot of trouble off duty and engage in a lot of impulsive or high-risk behaviors. And so we have a domain that we try and measure for off-duty behaviors that would discredit them and the law enforcement agency and the city or county. Like domestic violence would be a good example. Domestic violence is something that we screen for, and we try and screen out people that either have a history of or seem to be at high risk.